Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. Very happy. I think it's going to be Friday for all of you guys, February 20th, 2026. We're actually recording this very late on Thursday evening. And it's this very kind of cool little feature, special podcast we have tonight because we have a special guest. We have Troy from the Troy Talk podcast, which exists, I think, primarily on YouTube these days. But I'm going to let Troy talk all about that. But he has an awesome podcast that covers USC football. And he's, you know, interested in other USC sports, and he's a frequent member on the Discord channel for USCHoops.com, which I encourage everyone to get on if you're not there already. But yeah, awesome, really awesome podcast that Troy has. So Troy, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So Troy, tell us a little bit about your podcast. Like, when did you, how long have you had it now, and what inspired you to start it, and what are your, what are your goals for and all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, so when I was at USC, I did a little bit of writing for the Daily Trojan, kind of did like my little grades piece a la Scott Wolf back in the day used to do for the Daily News. So I started a little bit with that. And then kind of in grad school, developed the podcast when podcasting was becoming kind of a thing. And unfortunately, life stuff happened and I had to focus on some other things. So it went kind of MIA for a while, but I did bring it back this past year and went more the video route because I was more the audio route before. But it's on YouTube, on Spotify. We're looking to get hit 1,000 subs by May, and that'll be about a year of me being on YouTube. So that was kind of my goal going forward. And I'm having a lot of fun on it, making kind of my own community just like you have with your Discord. And it's been really fun so far.
And, you know, I don't watch a ton of USC football content on YouTube, even though there is quite a bit these days. But a lot of times, some of the other people doing content, I'm not the most impressed. I love your podcast though. I think it, you know, you really, when you take a position on something, you defend it very well. You have really great content, very interesting insights, very well prepared, really nice presentation, very concise. I mean, to me, it's like can't miss if you want to follow USC football. And it's not just like clickbaity or kind of just all over the place with opinions. It's a really kind of informative podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Chase. Thanks.
And I, you know, I will, I'm not going to comment on other YouTube creators, but if you had kind of questionable experiences in listening to other YouTube creators on USC football, definitely check out the Troy Talk podcast because it's really a cut above in my opinion. So, you know, one of the features you've got going, before we even hit that, I mean, I didn't preview this for you, but like, you know, what is your kind of take on, you know, global take on this past season for USC football and where we currently stand heading into, you know, the next step. So we can talk specifically about, you know, personnel for next season and Gary Patterson and all that. But what was your overall sense of how things went this past season?
Man, it's such a loaded question. I think I'll probably say cautiously optimistic, but I feel like I probably have been saying that for a long time now, especially since Lincoln Riley came to USC. So I feel like I'm just a broken record at that point. But I think with the NIL and kind of the big boys in the room, finally, it just seems like we have an identity, like at least what we're trying to do. So that gives me optimism. But, you know, I would be remiss to say, like, you know, I still have some worries about Lincoln Riley's kind of like coaching and just kind of the development of the program and the players. It remains to be seen on the field against those big boys like Oregon and Notre Dame. We just have not been able to beat the elite teams quite yet. But you know, I'm always hopeful. I'll be that sunshine pumper that the USC fans love to see. So yeah, I'm hopeful.
Now going into the season, I had predicted, now this was based upon, I've really gotten to the reason I did this, but there was a, someone I talked to who talks to somebody very, very central to the program. Let's put it that way. Everyone would know the name right away. Basically had predicted that we would go 8-4. this past season, that person. And that was before the whole DJ Winfield thing had happened. So as a result of that, I predicted that we would go 7-5. Now we ended up going 9-9-3. So my expectations were surpassed until we got to the bowl game. That's its own little, thing. What did you have a prediction going into last season?
Yeah, I did. I dropped a video. I think that was actually one of my first like bigger videos, and I actually did say 9-3, believe it or not. And I went a little bit more, kind of like the prediction route. I counted like half wins as like my prediction. Like I could see kind of toss up games, and I basically ended up with a two. Like we were going to either lose to Illinois and beat Nebraska or vice versa, and that's exactly how it ended up being, and it ended up being that 9-3. So I was predicting that Notre Dame loss, Oregon loss, and then one of the Nebraska and Illinois games.
So pretty darn spot on right there. Well, I'll ask for your prediction for the upcoming season in a few minutes. I don't want and that's maybe a spoil a video you're going to put out at some point here, but one of the cool features you have going on right now is you're counting down the 30 most important players going into next season. You're only about, I think, one third the way through the list at this point, right? When you're talking about this list of 30 players, what it's easy to say Jaden Myavi is the number one most important player, right? But like, what are the factors that make it a player most important that you're looking at?
Yeah, it's a really good question because we have a pretty big mix of youth, transfers, veterans, and guys that really haven't proven it yet. And I think I kind of wanted to take like a multifaceted approach. Part of it was, what position are they playing, right? Because as you saw last year, there were some positions that were very important to how well we did. For example, linebacker, right? So not to spoil too much, but like Desmond Stevens would be a perfect example because would I consider him a top five player? No, but I think you could argue that him being good for USC next year might be a top five most important kind of position or a player. Because if he does really well, I think our ceiling goes through the roof. But if he has a similar season to how he did last year, then I think our floor, our ceiling's limited and our floor's limited as well. So I kind of went that approach. Obviously, there are some really big freshmen. When you have this NIL spent in this number one recruiting class, you need some of those guys to contribute right away. But that is difficult because you can't always expect freshmen to commit right or contribute right away unless they're the odd five-star recruit. But so I did a little bit of them, and then obviously the normal ones like Jaden Maiava, but then also some people like that haven't taken that next step that we really do need to take that next step, like the Marcellus Williams of the world, the Alani Noah of the world. If those guys can turn into above average players, then USC's floor drastically increases, and I think we have the ability with consistency to beat those elite teams that we've been kind of failing to do the last couple of seasons.
So your list is really, it's kind of built in that the idea that the performance of the particular player can cause the team to rise and fall, that performance, whether they meet expectations or don't meet expectations, surpass expectations, fall drastically short, will have a direct impact on the performance of the team overall. And that's kind of what you're looking for in this list.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, so it's a really cool list. I think everyone should check out the videos. I get quick preview of some of the players that you're going to be talking about. You have of the 10 guys you've talked about already. You've talked about a couple receivers. You've talked about a couple cornerbacks. You've talked about a defensive lineman that is really important. And then you've started to talk about some offensive linemen, how they'll perform, another defensive end, and a certain transfer in the front six position, which I think I agree. I mean, everyone on your list, they will, how they perform will really impact how this team plays next season.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's talk a little bit about what you thought of the off season, and I guess the approach, this kind of, it wasn't ultra thin, but a little bit of a thin approach to the transfer portal. I think there's some interesting pickups there, but there's definitely, there's certain positions where there's been a lot of criticism because we did not hit those positions hard. I think, people had talked about interior offensive linemen, but with Alani Noah coming back, that kind of took pressure off to get interior offensive lineman. That's a surprise returning player we were not expecting. But the key really, that we're hearing a lot about, and it was on my list as well, linebacker and then probably safety, particularly with Gary Patterson coming in. We'll talk about him in a second, but Gary Patterson was not formally announced until the transfer portal closed for, I mean, it's still open as far as you can still come in to transfer in, although I think you're a little late for registering classes at this point, but you couldn't transfer out at that point. And there are a couple of guys that did transfer out that I wonder if they knew that Gary Patterson was coming in, if they might have had second thoughts about transferring out. But what are your thoughts about how we approach the portal, and what grade would you give that whole overall effort?
Yeah, I liked it, but I think we could have been a little bit more aggressive, and I think a little bit more aggressive in certain spots. I dropped a video about the linebacker position because that was the one, obviously, all USC fans could see last year. Our position group was not up to par, and there were so many good linebackers. I mean, Rasheem Biles, who I think ended up at Texas, if I recall, Gideon Lamprin ended up at Colorado. Both of those guys were PFF graded in the mid to high 80s, right? And they were all out there, for the picking. I think we had what, Owen Chambliss out of San Diego State, and then Hunter Long out of Colorado State. Both of those ended up at schools that, I mean, frankly, USC are better at. I think one of them was Arizona State, and then one of them was Nebraska. So they had a lot of good players, and we just didn't really go for them. And I think that's because Lincoln Riley is betting on Desmond Stevens, and I'm not sure that's a bet I would have liked to take. I think we could have got one of those big guys and still probably see if we can develop Desmond Stevens. I don't think that would have been a bad opportunity there. As far as on the offensive side, I mean, we definitely lost a lot with Lane and Lemon. I thought Terrell Anderson wasn't, again, my favorite pickup. I think he's good. I don't know if he's, I feel like you need to try to get someone that's at least 1A, 1B kind of thing with Tonik Hines, and I'm not sure he's that. But I did watch his film a little bit, and he's a very smooth runner, good after the catch. So I'm hoping that he materializes. But I mean, there were guys out there. Obviously, Cam Coleman's the big one, but that was, I think, a money issue more than anything. But there were some other good guys as well. So I think for the most part, Alex Van Sumeren's a really good pickup on the defensive line. I think that's going to be an underrated pickup. I think his veteran presence, just the sheer size and his ability to play in Patterson's system, is going to be really good. Jontez Williams, obviously skipped over him, but he's the number one DB PFF graded, and I think per everybody else's rankings in the country. Season ended a little short because of the ACL injury, but he has a, he's going to probably raise the ceiling. We haven't had a cornerback that good probably since Mekhi Blackman, and I'd probably say he's better than Mekhi Blackman. So a lot of things I would have done differently, but I think overall maybe like a B minus, if I'm being honest. I think a couple of players could have made it a B plus to A minus pretty easily though.
I don't, I like the Terrell Anderson thing. I mean, obviously, you could shoot for the moon with Coleman. Between Anderson and Marsh, I didn't really have, if that was really like a decision that had to be made, it to me, I'm actually was kind of okay with the Anderson thing because, it seems like Marsh was going to cost quite a bit more money and maybe cause more headaches. And, you kind of, you put them side by side, and I think even their PFF numbers, I think Anderson might have had better ones. So I didn't mind that so much. I think he could really excel in Lincoln's system. It's just, yeah, we're there's not a lot of room for error there, right? In that wide receiver room, there's a lot of talent, but they're freshmen really. And then we're kind of relying on a lot of guys that didn't perform last season, other than Tonik Hines. So I think, I do agree. We'll step up. I think he'll be our one, but I think he can step up and do that really well next season. But it's there is a little bit of a gap there. The tight end thing is interesting. I mean, I don't. Would you have a thought on Tucker Ashcroft? I mean, it's interesting that to me that's a route that we would go in that circumstance, given everything that was losing Lions and. A little bit unexpectedly, and then we lost Joey Olsen and stuff like that. I mean, it for us to pick him out of all the guys available, I'm curious how that eval went. His PFF numbers are not like off the charts.
No, I think he's going to be more of a halfback and a blocking tight end, if I'm going to be honest. I didn't see much of him stat wise as a receiver, although I think he was actually better as a freshman and just kind of petered away for whatever reason. But it is interesting that we didn't go hard with the tight end, because especially with Lincoln emphasizing 12 personnel so frequently last year, and that being more of the identity of USC's offense. I think part of it, though, truthfully, is we were kind of stuck with how much we invested in Mark Bowman. And if we did anybody that was starter caliber, and we brought somebody in that was like starter caliber and took away his snaps, I just think that might have caused a little bit of a rift. And that's just speculation on my part. But I mean, you do have Nella Tupou behind him, who I think showed some glimpses last year, especially in that UCLA game. So I don't think, I mean, Walker Lines was a big one. I was really hoping we just had that 1A, 1B at the tight end position. Not that I don't think that Walker Lines was, all world or anything, but he would have been, what, third year in the system, grown man, been in the weight room for a bit, pretty decent blocker, decent receiver, although he did drop a couple passes. So it would have been really nice to have that veteran presence. But I think for one thing, I trust Lincoln's evaluation with tight ends. And I think he's shown in the past with, what, Grant Calcaterra and Mark Andrews, all those guys, he's shown that he can develop tight ends and get them to the next level. So I mean, look, we're going to get a lot of Bowman snaps, whether we like it or not. And hopefully he kind of is all he's chalked up to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the only, you just with all the 12 personnel we ran last season, for those who don't, it's two tight end formation, one running back. You'd think that we would have, really emphasized to have a clear, I mean, I think, I guess we're the Josiah John Jefferson is the JUCO guy, is going to project as the other guy there, but I mean, with Tucker Ashcroft, it's just hard to know, what the, what they're, and yeah, maybe it is Tupou. I just can't, I don't know exactly, and I'm not there at practice, so it's hard for me to evaluate those guys. But I'm curious to see how that all works out. On the offensive line, I'll just mention one thing. We talk, we the two of us have talked a little bit about my big guy on that, which is Viacona. I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing that well upright, but he really, when he did play, it didn't play a ton, but he looked really good out there. I don't know if he would legitimately be able to challenge for starter minutes at tackle, but I am curious to see if he can work his way somewhere into this rotation of the offensive line. And what are your thoughts on how, do you have a thought on how the offensive line is going to shake out, where we're going to look at starters?
I mean, I'm actually pretty optimistic. I think we vastly outperformed expectation last year. Credit to the coaching staff on that one. But I think I predict Tanu to probably beat him out. But I think if you told me in spring practice, Viacona had a really good spring practice, I would not be shocked that he's a starting right tackle. I think obviously Page is going to be the starting left tackle, assuming he's healthy. Guards are probably going to be Noah and Raymond. I really hope Raymond is only playing guard, because the difference in him playing guard and tackle is night and day. I mean, like, he looks like an all-conference player as a guard, and then tackle, it just looks completely lost. And then center, that's a good one. I truthfully do not know what's going to happen there. I mean, it could be Killian O'Connor. He could get beat out. I'm not sure with some of the young guys. They got some dudes there. So maybe they even cross-train somebody and he develops as a center. I'm a little hesitant to say Killian O'Connor should be the insta starter, just because I think the ceiling for USC's offensive line is drastically decreased with him there. I think he's a good player. It's a good story, and he's a hard worker, but nothing more than kind of just a replacement level player based on what he's shown me. I mean, he could take that next step for all we know, but he was hurt quite a bit last year, so who knows if he lost a step there as well.
I wonder if I know he's not, the plan is not to make him long-term center, but Vlad Dyakhonov, I wonder if he's going to get a look at center, just as that fifth, a fifth lineman, just to try to get your best players on the field. I am curious, or maybe Tua now, if he's, he gets beat out of right tackle, something like that. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things, and of course, we haven't talked about Pepe. I know it's hard, if he's a true five star, and I think they think he is, you almost have to play those guys right away. So it's a lot of interesting things there. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Gary Patterson. What are your thoughts of him coming into the program? And then just how he's going to impact personnel, because I'm not sure that we necessarily recruited to the his strength. I mean, he really emphasized the safety position, and we recruited a ton of cornerbacks. So some of those guys are going to have to transition, I think. What are your thoughts on him coming in, and what kind of impact he's going to have on the program?
Yeah, I'm a massive fan of Gary Patterson. I obviously did a deep dive into the YouTube realm, but I'm also very, impressed, obviously, with what he did at TCU. Pretty unheard of, to be honest with you, the defensive stats he put up. I really like his ideas, his concepts. I like the way he coaches. I like the way he, you know, he's not afraid to lay into players if they make a mistake. But I think any interview from a player, you notice they really kind of hold him as like a father figure and really respect him and his acumen for the game. And I think you talk to anybody that knows ball and they all really respect Gary Patterson. And I do think, I mean, it's fair to say like the last couple of years were not the best, but I think he probably needed a little bit of a break. You know, the transfer portal was kind of becoming a thing. NIL was starting to become a thing, and it just was not his, you know, he's a small guy from what, Kansas, and playing TCU in Conference USA. So I think it just became a little bit too much for him, and he's kind of taken his reset. And, you know, I think he's ready to go. And now he's only going to be the defensive coordinator. He's watched a lot of film. He's done a couple consulting jobs. Like, I think he's going to be really prepared. And I just really love his 4-2-5 system. I think it's really good for the modern day. I don't think he's washed in that regard. I think he's still got a lot of good thoughts there. And as you mentioned, that safety position, it's going to be very, very important. But yeah, for those who want a little bit more of an in-depth video, we did drop one on my channel with a former Michigan defensive lineman who has played, I think he said he's played in like 4 or 5 different defenses. So he kind of goes into the nuts and bolts of the Gary Patterson defense and what makes it so good. But also, you know, I think we have to be fair here and be objective. Like, it's not perfect, right? There are weaknesses to the defense. And as you mentioned, right, we didn't really recruit the personnel of Gary Patterson, because that safety position is a massive question mark. And it would have been even more massive question mark if Alex Graham didn't resign late in the portal cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, I mean, you know, Gary Patterson, as far, you know, I'm a little bit older than you, and you know, he was certainly, he's a 21st century legend in college football. Mm-hmm. You know what happened though, about right around the time of COVID, it was kind of that end of that era almost of those coaches that had really sprung up in the first 20 years of the century. You know, kind of, you know, guys like Urban Meyer and Art Briles that had already been gone by then for a few years, but all those kind of innovative coaches are kind of coming to an end. And mm-hmm. You know, COVID, you know, with the COVID trend, it almost felt like a transition period, because right after that you get NIL exploding, just change, you know, you have the transfer portal opening, you have no penalty for transfers any longer. Mm-hmm. So just a very fluid personnel situation on programs. And the other thing you really had by that time, you know, for so long, for the first 15 years to 18 years of the 21st century, the best teams had the most innovative coaches. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening is there had been like this, like, you know, battle to see how much of the the more traditional offenses from even the, going back to the, even the 60s, but the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, how long they were going to last into the 2000s. And, you know, by the time you see Nick Saban bringing in Lane Kiffin and basically telling Lane Kiffin, you're not running I formation anymore at Alabama, mm-hmm. you know, that's, you're starting to see everybody is transitioning away from that older style system. And they're kind of, they're embracing all these new innovations, really spreading the field, things like that. Every team is adopting a version of the 4-2-5. It's not the same version that Gary Patterson necessarily mm-hmm. runs, but all of them have gone to his clinics, his seminars. I understand what he was teaching. So I think for him, the years off, it might have been an interesting opportunity for him to like brush up and get some, you know, new innovative ideas going and flowing. Because, you know, at some point in time, everyone just kind of caught up. They caught up mm-hmm. with all the innovations. And TCU had been right at, you know, this is not something you probably weren't around to watch the Sun Bowl in 1998.
Well, I've heard about it.
Yeah. So it was a very interesting game. You know, our star player back then was Chris Claiborne, a linebacker, phenomenal linebacker, one of the great 55s in the USC program. But he had been on the awards circuit and had been going to a whole bunch of award ceremonies and, you know, getting beefed up a little bit. He, you know, shows up in El Paso, you tell, a little heavy, a little slow foot. And TCU comes out. They actually had LaDainian Tomlinson as their backup mm-hmm. running back in that game. He got some carries, but not a ton of them. But that was the first time I think USC ever played a team that ran zone read out of shotgun. In fact, mm-hmm. I think it was the very first time we ever placed a team that had done normal running plays, not kind of draw plays out of shotgun. You know, TCU ran a lot of option out of shotgun. And that was, Gary Patterson was the defensive coordinator, not the offensive coordinator, but Dennis Franchione, who was the offensive coordinator, he kind of got a lot of credit for a lot of these innovations. He ends up going to Alabama, and then he leaves them to go to Texas A&M, which you can't imagine that happening now, but I mean, it did happen then. And that left Gary Patterson at TCU, and he kind of took this program that had been just dormant. And, TCU had been one of the kind of central programs in the old Texas conference, the Southwest Conference, and it was all the Texas schools plus Arkansas. And when that fell apart and those schools had to kind of merge into what had been the Big Eight, which included Oklahoma and Nebraska, TCU was not invited to the game. They were out of the they kind of got cut out until Gary Patterson brought that program back and got them back into the Big 12. That was a major achievement to take a program that had been in a major conference, had basically been not invited to the party to continue in a major conference, and then to have it just after being dormant for more than a decade, be completely resuscitated, become one of the top programs in the country. And then Gary Patterson is owed a lot of credit for that. Now, that was a long time ago, and we'll have to see what he can do now. But I'm a huge, huge fan, and I'm liking the things he's seeing. He's been saying, I do wonder, what are we going to do with the personnel here? Because Patterson can move guys around. A guy like, it's funny, a guy like Madden Reardon, who's coming in, he had played safety. He had played in the middle of the field. I think when he moved over to Sierra Canyon, they put him at cornerback, or at least that he's being listed at corner now. He's very light. I don't know if he's big enough to play safety in a Gary Patterson program, but he's a guy you'd think, oh, well, he's listed a cornerback, but he's really, he had a lot of success as a safety, but I don't know, he might be too small to do it. Who do you think on the list of guys that, kind of are listed as cornerbacks might actually be safeties in the Gary Patterson system?
Yeah, that's a good question, because there's a lot of young guys that I think we haven't really seen on the field, or a couple of them obviously we haven't because they're in this class. The first that come to mind is Rock Hill. That's a guy that could play field side corner, could play nickelback in the traditional like the Anthony Lynn nickelback role, could play free safety. He's just that athletically gifted, really rangy. RJ Sermons is like the big name that people are throwing around right now because I mean, he obviously his speed's like what 10.4, 10.5 speed as a on the track like what as a sophomore I think it was, or a junior. So he's very, very fast, very athletic there. And some are wondering if he's like almost similar to Damani Jackson in a way, or Iman Marshall, people like that. Would they just be a little bit better at free safety versus corner? And I think Madden Reardon's a really good example too. I think maybe asking him to play the nickel safety or the star safety in Gary Patterson's system might be a little bit too much of an ask. I think he does need to gain quite a bit of weight to even play the free safety role. But his IQ, I mean, if you watch his film, it's some of the best film of the class. He predicts things before it happens. He's in the right space at the right time. Like you could tell he was very well coached his whole life and just like loves the game of football and knows how to play it.
Yeah, very cool stuff. Okay, so you don't have to commit to this right now, but if pretty tough schedule, he's through very extremely tough games, and a couple other tough games for next season. Do you have any thoughts on where we're? I mean, look, you nailed it this past year. I'm sure you're going to do a video, so you don't have to commit to this. Do you have any thoughts where we're going to be on next season?
Man, I hate to say it, but I think, and I don't even think this is necessarily a bad thing, but I think 8-4 is probably more likely than 9-3. I think if I were to right now, I'd probably have to dig in, see how people look after spring and whatnot, look at the win totals and all that. But I think as of right now, it's probably 8-4. I mean, the schedule is one of the toughest I've ever seen. Kind of reminds me of Florida a couple of years ago in the SEC, where it's just like it's not a bad team and they went, 500. But just the road travel. Luckily, I think what we get Ohio State at home. So I mean, who knows what can happen there? Like anything can happen. But conversely, you get what I think we get Wisconsin on the road, which if that's a snow blizzard, who knows what happens in that game? It could be very similar to the Illinois game last year. Oregon is always tough. Luckily, we get them at home, so I think we have a chance. Washington, I believe. I don't know if I think that one might be on the
That's a
road. So that's
home game.
okay. That one's a home game. So that
Yeah.
one good, because I do not like playing up in Washington. I think that that Adoree Jackson game was a kind of not a fluke, but like that was a rare thing to go up in Washington and beat them down like that. So it's a mixture of really tough things. Luckily, I think we're going to get like a slow start to the season to see what we have working with us and get used to Gary Patterson's system and find out who's going to be kind of the big contributors. But I think after what the first three or four games, we have a pretty tough, you know, task right away. I think it might be Oregon early on in the season.
We have Oregon. Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be a big barometer. I mean, if we have to at least be competitive, I don't think that's necessarily a must win game. Oregon's still going to be very, very good. And they're a very good regular season team. Although, you know, I'm not the highest on Dan Lanning as a football coach, but as a recruiter and as a CEO, like he gets his dudes ready to play, especially in the regular season. Playoffs are a different story. But I really hope we show up to play that Oregon game. We're undefeated at that time, and we really, you know, show the country that we're ready to play for the 2026 season.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about, I guess, a couple of things with Oregon? You know, they replace both. And I guess in this answer, you can also talk about what would happen with us replacing our defensive line coaches. Mm-hmm. But Oregon replaced both coordinators internally with guys that were not necessarily the most heralded, you know, resumes. And then there was this a rumor that I believe 100% to be true, which is Oregon tried to hire Gary Patterson right before he signs with USC. And you have any thoughts about all that stuff?
Yeah, I think for the defensive side of the ball there, I think Lanning is a defensive coach by trade. Correct me if I'm wrong.
He's
pretty good one too. Like he's a pretty good mind there. So I think that won't change a whole lot, which is why they're hiring internally. And I also think the reason they hired internally offensively is because their last two offensive coordinators have been unreal. Like Kenny Dillingham, Will Stein, like those are, you know, some of the biggest young names in college football. And what they're both head coaches now. Dillingham just signed a, you know, a big new contract. Stein's over at Kentucky now. Those are very sought after people and well respected in the game. So I think that whoever, I don't remember who exactly they hired, but I'm assuming it's going to be the same offense, this kind of dink and dunk, really good run game offense that kind of just opens you up and gashes you eventually. It makes a lot of sense to me. Why rock the boat if it's been working for you? I think their problems in the playoffs are not because of necessarily scheme. It's because either the coaching's not preparing them properly or the players just aren't showing up.
Any thoughts on the Gary Patterson thing, that, you know, that rumor? And I think it's true because the same guy was the one who told us that he was the one that USC was interviewing when nobody else was talking about it. Do you think it's possible that Oregon was trying to poach him at the last second?
Yeah. I'm not sure if it was necessarily, do you know if it was confirmed if it was a defensive coordinator or more for like an analyst or an assistant role?
Well, that's a good question. It was whatever the job was, it was enough that it got USC's attention about compensation. Because I think that was used to try to, you know, as a negotiating position. If it was a mere analyst job, and maybe it was being couched as analyst or something like that, but if it was a mere analyst job, you would not think he'd be getting paid like $2 million, which you got to assume that Gary Patterson actually is getting paid. So you would not think that would be like a competitive offer. Obviously, you can't. They have the defensive coordinator. They hired this guy, Chris Hampton, to be at least the nominal defensive coordinator, even though Lanning is probably the real defensive coordinator. But, you know, maybe maybe the position is, you know, special assistant to the head coach or assistant head coach for defense, something like that, that was offered to Patterson. That's only speculation. But to me, it's interesting that they were actually, you know, willing to spend some money to bring him up there.
Yeah, I don't know how much he fits culture-wise, to be honest with you. That just seems like the antithesis to what Gary Patterson represents, like everything that Oregon represents. So I'm not sure that would have worked. But just thinking what they ran last year with like their personnel, I mean, I'm not going to lie. Gary Patterson's scheme with the people they had last year, their linebackers were very, very good. Their safety, the transfer from Purdue was very good. And their corners are just like unreal, like the young corners they got going on there. So I mean, I'm glad. I don't want a good defensive mind up in Eugene. So I'm glad he's you know, with us here at USC.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's chat a little bit about basketball, because you're on the Discord channel for the USCHoops.com. What are your, I mean, look, this is, we're recording this the night after this absolutely horrific performance against Illinois at Galen. And, you know, Chad Baker, what's going on with Chad Baker Mazar is not clear. I think the effort was terrible yesterday, irrespective of everything else. But yeah, we are completely outclassed. But at the same time, you know, this is not the team we were supposed to be. You know, you're missing Rodney Rice, Chad Baker Mazzara, and Marion Dickerson's obviously not playing. And then you finally have Elijah Arenas back, but he I don't know if you knew this, he had like the flu. So he was a shadow of himself. We really couldn't play Gabe Dines at all due to their pick and pop offense, because he couldn't get out on threes, and we couldn't really guard, ball screens with their main guys. It was just a total mismatch for us, especially without Baker Mazzara out there. But if you put that aside, any thoughts on what you've seen from the team this season?
I mean, look, I'm as critical as you know of Mus as I possibly can be at times, but it's pretty impressive the results he's got out of the season given the injuries. I mean, losing Rodney Rice, losing to Marion Dickerson, I mean, Chad Baker Mazzara being out the last couple weeks, he's basically had to retool the team and play players he was having really no, intention of playing. And I think a lot of it's relied on Jacob Kofi and Ezra Asar, and we just don't really have the guards to take the pressure off of them. And you mentioned Dines. I mean, like asking Dines to play against a team that's basically a European professional team with all that ball movement in the pick and pop, that's like quite literally the worst matchup you could possibly ask. So, I mean, he's making do with what he can. This is not the team that we expected coming into the season. I think it's fair to say we were the ceiling of like a top 15 team if everybody was healthy. Do I think it's enough to be in like that top eight range where I think those are the people that have a chance to win the national title? No, probably not. But it's been really difficult for us this year, and I mean, I'm pretty incredible that we still have a chance to make the tourney if things go our way, considering all the injuries.
Yeah, and the one number, it's gotten a little better, but still, it's just like a crazy number. In conference, we're shooting under 30%, 29.1% from behind the arc. I mean, and that's not coaching. I mean, that's just, we don't, our best shooter was Rice, and he's not around. And we were relying on Arenas to be one of our key shooters, and he missed the entire summer, and he missed the entire fall camp and preseason. And didn't show up, didn't start playing until late January. And he's just, he's getting his shot, his fill, his shot back. And then Chad Baker Mazzara is now been hurt the last couple of weeks. So it's just, trying to win games when you don't have shooters. We, you know, gay Jaden Brunell was shooting pretty well for a while, and then basically stopped playing him because of his lapses on defense. And Terrence Williams never picked up his shooting again, even though he actually hit two threes yesterday, which was kind of shocking to watch at the time. You just don't have, like, you just don't have that shooting. And if you don't have the shooting, it just puts so much pressure on you to score. We still score okay. I mean, we score 73 points a game in conference, but we're under 50% for effective field goal percentage. Not great. The defense is, I think, generally been pretty strong except for yesterday's game. But you look at, like little things that are look kind of sometimes out of your control. And the teams that we're playing are shooting like 78% from the free throw line. That's, I mean, that's like, that's a little, that's tough. That's rough, because you're not expecting to
You
your
got to play better
opponent.
defense at the free throw line, Chase. That's
Yeah,
just the way
exactly.
it is.
Our free throw defense is trash. Do you have any thoughts? So what, look, we've got the twin sons of Theo Ratliff signed, different kinds of players, Adonis and Darius Ratliff. It looks like we're gonna get Christian Collins. I, say that knock on wood, I don't want to jinx it. It's looked like that in the past, and then it didn't happen, but now it looks like everyone seems to think it's gonna happen. What are your thoughts on, like, hey, what should SC be looking for personnel-wise? I mean, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the big thing, right, aside from the Ratliff twins already being signed, is keeping people as well, right? So Rodney Rice is one, the first on the list, in my opinion. I think you see what kind of team we could have been with Rice and what kind of team we are without him. Kofi, Dickerson, those are the kind of the three core you want to build behind. Marsh would be nice. I think he's a nice little spark plug off the bench. He's definitely not someone you want to be starting in the Big Ten, but I think he's good enough to, be, 8 points a game, 9 points a game, and hit threes, because I think he can shoot. I think he just forces it a little bit too much, like trying to get the volume because no one else can shoot. But I think he's shown that he can shoot. And then Dines would be nice, I think, for situational. I don't think he's ever going to be someone you can play heavy minutes consistently. I think it's just going to be all matchup dependent. And Arenas is a big question mark, right? I don't know if he stays or if he goes, and that may make a difference into who we go into for the transfer portal. But I think what you said, the Ratliff twins, my understanding is one of them shoots a little bit better than the other, so that might be a little bit more pick and pop. And then Collins, you can probably elaborate a little bit more on his game. But I guess the question I wanted to ask you, so you mentioned the 3-point shooting. Do you think that the personnel we'd be returning, this is not counting the transfer portal, I guess, and this is including Collins, assuming he signs, do you think that's a good enough shooting team, or do you think you'd have to supplement that in the portal?
You know, that's a great question. And I think so. I'm going to answer this in a very long answer. So I hope people will indulge me. I have two kind of competing issues going on with personnel. One is, I think Muss really needs retention. He's struggled with personnel turnover. I think retention is important. I think you want to keep key guys. If you look at most of the top, even a team like Michigan, and that's brought in like these new guys, they have a certain bedrock of players that were on the team last season. Now, it just so happens that their three top players were not on the team last season. Arguably, their top four, if you include the freshman McKinney, but they have like six returning guys that are really key to that team. I'd like to have as many returning guys as we can, because I think all of them can play basketball at a certain level, and that includes Jerry Easter as well. However, none of them shoot very particularly well, none of the returners other than Rodney Rice. And Marsh is obviously a question mark. He has shot well at times, but and I think he forces it here and there, but he is a little bit undersized. Definitely he's more of a scorer than a shooter. He can shoot. So what do you look at for shooting for next season? Well, assuming you have Rice, assuming you have Kofi, who's actually improved his shooting in the last couple of weeks, because Kofi is obviously the key, right? And Dickerson is not going to improve his shooting too much. He is kind of who he is, and I want him back desperately, but you can't be counting on him all of a sudden to become a 40% 3-point shooter. These other three freshmen are the other ones you're looking at, and they are this year have shot tremendously from three. And there was a game where before the high school season started, the team that the Ratliff brothers were on, they played in kind of a prep circuit where they couldn't play under their normal school names. For all the players from the school called themselves the New York Crusaders or something like that, and went to go play other prep schools, which had like a big time talent. And their team has some, I mean, they had three McDonald's All-Americans on a normal high school team. This is like a CYO, Catholic school team. In that particular game, it was Adonis hit 9 3-pointers in the game. And this was a game that was on NBA TV. I mean, it was a major showcase for future big recruitable NBA talent, and he just showed up. And that's what caused them to like go in from the rankings from the 40s to into the top 20 for both of them. Will that kind of shooting materialize next season? That's going to be a huge question mark. Even Darius, the less kind of like big time shooting of the two of them, he's a good shooter too. I mean, I've seen games where he's hit. I watched them play IMG the other day, and Adonis is essentially has been injured for most of the high school season. So Adonis played like the first 30 seconds, and then I think just to register an appearance in the game, and then went sat the rest of the game. And in that game, Darius hit like three or four threes. So they're hitting threes. Can they do this in college? That's a big question mark. Christian Collins was notorious over the summer in EYBL ball, which is the highest level AAU ball, for missing shots. He was not shooting well at all. And then all of a sudden the fall rolls around, and he's just been hitting threes like crazy. And his jumper has just been money, 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 which I'm like, it's almost like hard to understand how you can improve that much, because it's not like he changed shot mechanics. He still has a very kind of line drive shot. But he's just nailing shots now, and I don't know if he's just getting more comfortable with his body maturing. Can those guys hit threes also in college? Maybe they will. Maybe they will, especially if they have a whole summer to stay healthy. That's a big thing. I think you'd see from Elijah, you'd see instead of him shooting 25% from there, I think you'd be seeing him shooting closer to 40% from three if he had that off season and got used to it, and wasn't just thrown in, and taking back, being forced to take threes where nobody else is on the court with him, to kind of like distract, to open him up from the 3-point range. So I hope that they'll be good enough on their own, but the answer to the question, to get back to your original question, I do think we're going to need to hit the portal for 3-point shooting. There's going to be some very intriguing names out there. Some of them are from Southern California. So this is a really strange year where there were like three or four fairly high performing true freshmen out of Southern California that did not, that USC either didn't really look at or kind of just totally slipped under the radar. There's Elzy Harrington, who we was a commit to SC for a while from St. John Bosco, teammate at that time of Christian Collins and Brandon McCoy. Before Brandon McCoy moved over to Sierra Canyon, he ha had started the season. I think he hit like his first 7 3-point attempts in college. I mean, that's, and then he's at San Diego State. He's since kind of gone up. He kind of like regressed to the mean, and then he's been injured recently, so he hasn't played as much. But he looks like he could be a big time scorer in college. But the kind of some of the more interesting ones, you had this kid from I think he went to Rancho Cucamonga, Ace Glass, who's up at Washington State. He played in Maui. He's going to be in the transfer portal the moment the season ends, because there's going to be some high major that's going to want to take a shot at him. He's one of the top 3-point makes guys in the country this season. Then you have Colorado's starting shooting guard, Isaiah Johnson, who's from Campbell Hall in Los Angeles. He kind of flew under the radar a little bit. He's not as much of a shooter. He shoots a little bit, but he's really a penetrator. His shooting efficiencies have been pretty strong. Not great, pretty strong. I'm not sure he's like the ideal guy we need, but I'm sure Musk would absolutely love to have him, because he draws fouls on getting to the rim like crazy. But he's at Colorado, so that's an actual power conference program. So, he may not be looking to bolt from Colorado. We just don't know. And then the last guy is Jake. I think it's Jake Hall, right? From at New Mexico. He followed Eric Olin from UC San Diego as a commit there. Jake is a is from Carlsbad, so a little bit south. But his season, I mean, this is. It's a pretty crazy kind of the numbers that he's put up this season at New Mexico. If you're going to be playing at UC San Diego, that's a certain level, right? So that's a Big West level. I mean, obviously UC San Diego had a really strong team last season under Eric Olin. He took them to the tournament. But New Mexico, now you're in Mount not only are you in the Mountain West, but you're in a program that's a kind of a well-known, really kind of has a lot of history in that program, a lot of success. And this season, he comes out in conference, in Mountain West Conference. He is shooting 47% from three on fairly high volume. I mean, he's attempting almost 7 threes a game, and he's average, and this is in conference play. He's averaging 17 points a game. So, is that a guy that you have to take a hard look at? I mean, getting him out of New Mexico, it's possible, but you're gonna have to pay him a lot. I mean, the UCLA got Donovan Dent out of New Mexico. Maybe they didn't want it. The amount of money they spent, maybe they think they spent too much to get him. Hall is not a superstar athlete, but he's a hell of a basketball player. And he's, as a true freshman, he's scoring 17 points a game on 64% effective field goal percentage. I mean, that just doesn't happen. If his free throw percentage is only like 75%, if you were to get that up to 90, which I'm sure he could do the way he shoots, he's going to be a 40, 50, 90 guy. I mean, he's that potential level of player. Do you take a look at him? I mean, I take a look at him. Even if Elijah Arenas was coming back, I take a look at him. I don't know the entire scope of how much NIL money we're going to have, but yeah, I think we've got to look for some shooters. Absolutely. So, I don't know. So what are your, you have any, thoughts on our tournament prospects? Do you think we're going to make the tournament, or where are you at with that?
Man, I think the original thought was right. You split UCLA, beat Oregon and Washington, and you have a chance. And I think that's probably still true, but I think you probably can only have what, two losses going forward, or maybe even one to like guarantee yourself in.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you have to beat the two. You got to win at Washington. That's going to be very difficult. Obviously, you cannot lose to Oregon at home. And then between playing UCLA twice and Nebraska, you got to win two of those three, is my opinion. if you split all those games, I think at best you're looking at, you're playing first four in Dayton at best, and that might even require winning a game or two in the Big Ten tournament, is my guess.
I don't know. If we don't get healthy, I think, I mean, that Chad Baker-Mazzara, I think kind of it hinges on that. If without him, it's not, it's kind of really pointless to even talk about, right? Because I don't think we'd go far in the tournament without him.
Yeah, and the real problem there is he wasn't even on the bench yesterday, so no one even knows where he was. So
Yeah, that's
hopefully
never
there's
good.
a never good. Hope there's a story there that sounds good, but Muss did not answer that directly during the press conference after game yesterday. So hard to know these days, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining. Anything else you want to say before to talk about before we get out of here?
No, I think we're good. I mean, anytime you want me on, I'm down. I'll make the time as best I can. I love talking ball. As far as my channel, I mean, off season, we kind of go with the tide that the news takes us. So I'll try to come up with my own unique content. But yeah, that's when season starts, or kind of when summer camp starts. That's when it's going to be coming a little bit more frequently, and hopefully with a little bit more fire. But hopefully by then, the 1,000 sub mark will be hit. And we will be officially making, like I said, our $1.50 per music or per YouTube video
Yeah,
that the big boys are making. But it's more of just a goal that I set for myself, more than obviously a money thing. This is all for fun. You and I both just love ball, and that's why we do it.
absolutely, absolutely. But you're on your had me on your way to being a billionaire podcaster. So, oh, by the way, what is your because I know you did a video on this on Honor
Oh
Falave
yeah.
Johnson. What position do you think you should play in college?
Oh, I think his ceiling is highest as a running back. And I think that might be what he wants to play. But I think also you have to caution that with, I mean, you get beat up as a running back, and just the risk and reward. It's I think if you put him at safety, he will be an NFL player, absolutely no doubt. But like, I think like home run potential, like his absolute ceiling, like running back, he could be one of the best running backs we've seen from Southern California. And I don't say this lightly, not to just like hype up of being sunshine pumper, but like since Reggie Bush, like he's that like gifted athletically, and we just have not really seen it. But I think if USC gets him, I think they'll let him play both, at least to start in camp. But I tend to think he probably will be best at running back, but I think he will end up being a safety.
It's funny. Someone had mentioned, have you ever heard of a two-way player that played safety? And that was a great question. I don't know if I've ever heard of a two-way player that played safety. Just because you're expected to get a lot of hits, a lot of contact, going up against linemen, making plays on, often the safeties are going to lead the team in tackles. You're running back and breaking up passes. I mean, you're all over the field as a safety. As a running back, for people haven't seen him. There's some pretty cool video of him. I would compare him to Darren McFadden from Arkansas. There's all to me, similar size, lots of speed. If people remember McFadden, he was kind of rocking the world there for a while for Arkansas. So those are just my thoughts. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Check out the Troy Talk Pod, awesome podcast. Very close to 1,000 subscribers on YouTube there, and it's coming very soon. And yeah, check out his content. Really
Yeah,
appreciate
thanks,
it.
Chase. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And for everyone else, fight on.